On November 3rd in Hopwood Auditorium, Robert Morris University, join me, Don Luisi, for Bringing the Blues to RMU. This is a live event featuring Pittsburgh's Queen of the Blues, Jill West, and Blues Attack. Along with a screening of Blues Chronicles from the Berg, three short documentary profiles of Pittsburgh blues legends Eugene Morgan, Bill Weiner, and Jill West. This tribute to the blues is sponsored by the Blues Society of Western Pennsylvania, the Academic Media Center, and RMU Radio. That's Bringing the Blues to RMU. Friday, November 3rd at 5 p.m., Hopwood Auditorium, Robert Morris University. Admission is free to the public.
And welcome back. It is another edition of Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs. And you may be wondering, where are the dulcet tones of the voice of my colleague, Dr. Anthony Moretti? Well, the good news is he is right here.
The bad news is it's more dull than dulcet today.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I have caught the first head cold of the academic year, and the medicine is sort of wearing off, so I'm here in body, but I'm in some fog somewhere.
Okay, so it's with the Podcast Profs?
Well, at least I'm here, unlike you.
That's
who
true.
Didn't show up to... No. By the way.
I'd put it as prof and a half.
Prof and a half? Okay.
Prof and a half? Oh,
okay, so
wow.
We got half a tank.
Wow.
That's good.
John tossing me under the proverbial bus here this morning, huh? So By the way, we need to wish this man a happy 15th wedding anniversary.
Happy anniversary, Dr. Fanning.
Thank you.
Indeed.
No one's more surprised than I am.
I know. Well, as I said on my Facebook page this morning when I complimented both you and your lovely lady, that, you know, the question really is, she's put up with you for that. I mean, happy anniversary.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Exactly.
And my wonderful defense is that, well, she knew what she was getting into.
She did?
She did indeed. But
wow.
So we have...
So you have blackmail pictures, in other words. Is that what you're telling us?
Shut up. So I have here our friend, our buddy, our pal, and producer extraordinaire, John Roland. I am Dr. Soren Fanning, and this week we're going to be discussing openings and closings.
Yes, and none of it has to do with the stock market.
Not at all, which apparently is still humming along till it hums right off that cliff. So,
which it will.
Inevitably.
Yes, hopefully after you and I are in, like, deep into retirement, you know?
Well, it's okay. I have zero assets anyway.
Ah, so zero from zero is zero.
Exactly. So
I know that feeling.
There's a wonderful benefit when you have tenure. You can just sit in your ivory tower and watch the world burn. It's a wonderful thing.
Speaking of zeros, and this is the first opening, I'm hoping the Yankees put up a lot of zeros on the scoreboard in the next five games.
Ah, yes. And even though you can't hear it right now, my good friend Anthony over here, this is the beginning of his happy time because Major League Baseball playoffs have begun.
Yes.
And so who do you have in the first round?
I have Cleveland and Houston advancing in the American League, and that is both who I think will win and who I would prefer win. And in the National League, I've got L.A. and Chicago, but I am actually hoping that the other teams, Arizona, beats LA and that Washington beats Chicago. But I'm more confident in what I think will happen than what
right.
I want to happen.
Now, obviously, as I'm pretty much with you on
except
all of
the
those
Cubs.
Predictions. Well, you know, I am a Cub fan. I have to pull for it. Now, that said, I do not in any way expect the Cubs to win the World Series this year. No way.
I do notice my Indian fans have that same kind of quiet optimism that the Cubs fans had last year. And I really do think when it's all said and done, the Indians are going to win it this year.
I am in total agreement with you.
I think that will happen.
And if that wasn't enough, Hockey has begun.
Hockey has begun. The National Hockey League season dropped the puck last night. It would appear that the locals, the Pittsburgh Penguins, according to one of my sources, who's also known as my 18-year-old son, who might have watched the game last night,
Sure.
And he informs me that the team was lethargic and did not deserve to go to overtime, so losing to St. Louis was appropriate for based on the way they played.
So for those of you Penguin fans out there, just remember, don't get too upset. There's, what, 81 more games to go?
81 more games to go, and chances are that this team will be among the final two or three standing and probably playing for the Stanley Cup in the spring.
And even if they don't make it all the way, you've had two back-to-back years.
There's always next year. Just ask Cub fans.
Oh, absolutely. We set the record.
108 of them, all right?
Yeah, 108 next year.
I'm beginning to think that the Pittsburgh Pirates might actually turn out to be the 21st century version of the Chicago Cubs. They could become
like in the 2090s, they're still looking longingly at the portrait of Roberto Clemente.
And still wondering.
2290s. Let's be real here.
Wow. Wow. Man, he's on a roll this morning.
He is. This is good.
Did you get up on the right or the wrong side of the bed this morning?
Neither.
Neither? Well, you got up out of bed this
morning. I got up out the center of my bed.
The center of the bed.
Yeah,
all right.
It's that foot of the bed dismount.
By the way, I did notice on Saturday night that he and his lovely lady were at the RMU student performance of Evita, which was a remarkably well-done five-day, four nights, one-day event. I saw you and Olivia on Saturday night.
And I did hear that Moretti the Younger was in that
Moretti
production.
The Younger was part of the children's choir. And he, as he said to me, he enjoyed the fact that, among many things, being in the choir meant that for all of the rehearsals, he could hang out with people who were his age and that he could kind of be a kid and all of that. So he enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, and you know, that's actually one of the things, you know, I think we push people, children, too hard to grow up too fast.
Amen.
In our modern society. You only get to be a kid once, unless you become a tenured faculty member, at which point you can act childlike whenever you want.
I was going to say, when did you and I grow
up?
All right.
You know, well,
in age and in midsection, but not emotionally.
Precisely.
Exactly.
I've got an eye appointment coming up at the end of the spring semester, and the word on the street is bifocals are in my future.
Ah, well, for somebody who is wearing those, it's not that bad, but be careful the first time you put them on, because there is that sort of place where one focal meets the other,
so to speak.
And all of a sudden, like you're walking down a flight of stairs, and it's like, whoa, what just happened in front of me?
The comedian Brian Regan had a great line about that because he was recommended for trifocals. He said, I can't fathom what that's got to be like.
That would be interesting.
You know, you're sitting there reading a book. Is that a page? Is that a star? Is that Alpha Centauri? I mean, it's just
exactly
everything shifts.
So those are just, and we have more openings we're going to discuss later, but certainly the opening of the Major League Baseball season, or the playoff season, I mean, and the opening of the National Hockey League season. Did make me feel better last night. And I know technically the playoffs started the other night. I recognize that. You want to celebrate or recognize an almost this day in history.
Right. We unfortunately missed it by 24 hours, but it is the celebration of a different opening that I think we'll stick with our Sultan of the Soundboard over here.
Yeah, they got the old Soviet national anthem over there. Can you
well, the
call
tune
it
is
up
the same as the current one.
Well, it is the tune. It is very true.
They don't pay
true.
Me enough for that.
They don't pay.
Yeah,
ooh,
all right.
Wow. Holy cow.
You can make your donations.
Exactly.
I can get it. It just won't. It'll be very untimely.
That's okay. Don't worry about
perfectly
it.
Perfectly fine. But
make your checks.
60
to John
days.
Rowland,
exactly.
ROW. No.
60 years ago and one day.
Mm-hmm.
The space age opened. It began the launch of the first artificial satellite, Sputnik.
Are there natural satellites?
There are. The moon is one. A satellite is just something that orbits another body.
Oh.
Yeah.
So when I walk around you, I'm an artificial... Never mind. Let's just keep on going. Let's just keep on going.
My gravitational field hasn't grown that much. Although apparently I'm putting in a good effort. But yes, so six... October 4th, 1957 was the launch of Sputnik, the beginning of the space age.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one other maybe opening, but unfortunately it was marred by a lot of unrest and violence. And here we have to go to beautiful España.
Catalonia.
Yes.
There, the... I'm concerned how that's going to end. For those who have not been following the news, long story short is that Catalonians have been seeking off and on independence from Spain. The most recent referendum vote was over the weekend, and something like 90% of the population voted for it.
Which is a pretty stunning endorsement.
That's a rather high number. I mean,
well, you can't get 90% of Americans to agree on pizza toppings, much less a political future.
And unfortunately, the response by the Spanish government was to unleash the police forces.
Yeah.
Again, we're all guilty of seeing the world through the political lens of which we see it. To me, if a group of people vote and they don't vote the way you like,
Brexit.
As a government, you can't unleash the police to try to rein it in. If nothing else, what that's going to do is harden and magnify, or magnify opinions and harden them. So, the king of Spain, who and that title,
and they still have one, by the way.
Yes, and that is much more of sort of a ceremonial post more than anything else, and who very rarely, if speaks to the nation on anything of substance.
That one, Carlos,
isn't it? No, it's...
See, now I got to look it up.
Oh, shoot. I forget who it is right now. But that's okay. But anyhow, even he the other day spoke of his concerns about this taking place, meaning a referendum or a secession of Catalonia. And
Felipe VI.
Felipe, there you go. One of the challenges is... and probably one of the reasons that Spain does, or at least the Spanish government, does not want to see Catalonia secede is that that area encompasses Barcelona, and that is roughly 20% of the country's GDP.
Right. I mean, that would be the equivalent of California leaving.
Yes. Yes. Which, some days my friends on the right would say that would be a good thing, But,
economically, not so much.
Until the reality hits. Yeah. But, the reason that I don't think that's going to end well is because the Spanish government has already basically drawn the proverbial line in the sand.
Right.
And the response by unleashing the police forces, I think, sends a very, very tenuous message.
Well, and bear in mind, the people of Catalonia, they do have their own language, Catalan. It's close to Spanish, but it's not Spanish.
It's not the same.
And I think what the king of Spain is mostly worried about is it's the same fear of any secession movement. If Catalonia goes,
what goes next?
What about the Basque region?
Yep.
You know, and does the whole shoot and match unravel?
Yes. Yes.
Until in 2050, we're left with everyone is the, autonomous people's republic of his or herself.
Well, that would be okay. I'd have my own government.
The federal union of you and me, and I ain't so sure about you anymore.
Exactly. But all kidding aside, the ramifications of this economically are obvious, culturally are obvious,
right?
Trade wise are obvious. Would an independent Catalonia, presuming that would be the name of the country, would it be part of the EU? How could it apply for EU status? Would it be quickly supported, not supported? Would the Spanish government support it, not support it? And there is the reality that four, including one of the most successful soccer teams in La Liga, the professional Spanish league of soccer in Spain, would technically no longer be part of the league because the bylaws of the league state that you have to be part of Spain in order to be in the league.
Well, and it's interesting. Canada in the 1990s had a near miss of this very same thing.
With Quebec.
And one of the things that actually turned the tide against independence for the Québécois was the fact that the Québécois, those who live in Quebec.
Wow. Look at you spouting German.
Oh, my head.
I mean, Korean. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
How long ago did you take that cough medicine anyway?
I know you were speaking Italian, exactly. So keep going.
Oh, nice. Well done. Oy vey.
That's Yiddish.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. But the fear was that if Quebec dropped out, they'd also be dropping out of the North American Free Trade Agreement.
Yes.
They would actually lose money due to confederal subsidies and things of that nature. So at the end of the day, they basically said, yeah, we might as well stick together. But that was a near-run thing.
Near, exactly.
But of course, now it doesn't look like there'll be any referendum in the future. If you look up at Canada, the Bloc Québécois, the Independence Party, is shrunk to, I think, just about its weakest point ever in the Canadian Parliament. So.
Indeed.
So those are the openings.
Those are the openings. Unfortunately, that means we have closings.
Yes. And do you want to take the first one, or shall I lead off?
Do you want me to take the first one? I'll take the first one, and I'll take it. I'll take the most local of the three or four we'll discuss today. And by the way, you are listening to episode 7. I've lost, math and me are not good. This is our 7th, right?
Yeah, seven
of the. And
if it isn't, I'll just lie.
We'll just lie, exactly. Of upon further review with the podcast profs. He is Soren Fanning, and I am under the weather. And John Roland is, of course, keeping us sane. And what's your favorite phrase? The voice in our head?
Yeah.
It. Exactly. Yeah. He's so soft-spoken, you know. But all kidding aside, one of the first closings is the end of the political career of Tim Murphy, who represents the 18th district in Southwest Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
This one spiraled in a hurry.
Well, why fall flat on your face when you can run headfirst through a plate glass window, apparently?
Right. Now,
several of them, actually.
Yeah,
several of
them. In quick succession.
Now, I will...
On roller skates. Through molasses.
Holy cow, how bad is this? I will admit full disclosure here. Tim Murphy represents the district in which I live.
Yep.
I've met Tim Murphy on two or three different occasions. I found him to be a humble, easygoing, you know, he doesn't carry that air of, I'm a national politician, get out of my way. So, you know, I confess to some extent that I might be a little biased here, the degree to which familiarity allows that to happen. But this story began to spiral about a month or so ago,
right?
When we relearned, for lack of a better word, of an affair.
Gotta love that. Relearned.
Yeah, relearned of an affair that the 60-something-year-old Murphy was having with a woman literally half his age. I think he's 64 and she was 32. Now, I'm not going to get into the morals of it. You know what? People's married lives are their business. I thought the whole thing with Bill Clinton was a whole bunch of nonsense and pursuing impeachment charges, you know. So I'm just going to leave the morality.
Yes,
off
but
to
that's
the side.
Not why he's leaving.
Precisely, I'm leaving the morality off to the side here. But Tim Murphy built his political career around a couple of things. One was honesty, integrity, loyalty, and pro-life.
Double whoops.
And here's where basically the knees got cut out from under him and he had nowhere to go.
You're being very generous
with
that.
I'm being generous.
I was thinking of different things that have been electorally cut off, but
yes,
go ahead.
Yes, well, ouch. Roughly 3 days ago now, earlier this week, we learned of a text that Tim Murphy and his mistress exchanged. In which he suggested to her that if indeed she was pregnant, and I don't think that turned out to be the case, I don't think she was indeed pregnant,
right,
that he wondered if it would be in everyone's best interest if she had an abortion.
And that sound you hear is the bottom falling out of Tim Murphy's political career.
Exactly. Because, again, I'm leaving the morality out of this, but if you stake that political claim or that political foothold of being pro-life, you know, to some extent, you got to practice what you preach.
Well, and particularly on the abortion issue, primarily because this is a man who built a career arguing that the moral imperative was so powerful that he had to support legislation that would restrict people's bodily autonomy.
Exactly.
For half the American population.
Right.
And then to turn right around then when it becomes, and I'm trying to be delicate here, inconvenient.
Yes, yes.
To chuck all that essentially reveals all of that supposed morality
exactly.
to be a sham.
And so Murphy announced earlier this week that he would not seek re-election, that he was, quote, retiring, unquote. And, you know, again, I am not...
No attention to those townspeople with the ropes and the rail.
I am not arguing the abortion issue. It's not my point. My point is simply that his political career was toast when he staked his reputation on the pro-life movement, and then when it came to himself, he couldn't support it.
Right.
So that's closing number one.
Well, and to segue into closing number two, it would be the equivalent of one of these staunch gun control advocates.
Oh, yes.
Being discovered to having their own little private arsenal.
Yes.
That you want to take away these people's rights, but for you, it's okay. And that is, of course, closing number two. And in a way, it's not a current closing. It's a reminder that a door is permanently closed.
Yeah, as you said to me earlier this week, I agreed with you.
Yeah, but obviously we have to address the mass murder.
The terrorism.
The terrorist mass murder in Las Vegas, Nevada. In which, and this is, now, unfortunately, you've been hearing that this is the worst mass shooting in American history.
Modern American history, it is.
Well, and it's actually not.
Yeah, well, okay.
It's actually not.
Yeah, this is true.
And you know, being a historian, this is where I'm just a brief little lesson, but I want to take you back to May 31st to June 1st, 1921, in which...
We had a country back then?
Oh, indeed we did.
Oh, okay.
And this is when the town of Tulsa, Oklahoma...
Yes.
...went stark raving mad... And proceeded to the entire white population basically availed themselves of guns and proceeded to rampage through what was then called the Black Wall Street District.
Mm-hmm.
An investigation by the Red Cross at the time has since been corroborated by a 2001 investigation by an Oklahoma agency that pegged the death toll there at over 300 with another 800 wounded.
Egad.
So, and that, it's simply known as the Tulsa Race Riot.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, in point of fact, the actual worst mass shooting in American history. Now, if you want to get technical, this was the worst one by one individual.
Person. Sure.
But what blows my mind about this, and here, I'm not here to debate the Second Amendment. It's there. I get it. I would like to point out, though, in the 1930s, that the National Rifle Association and the Supreme Court both stated that there were limits on the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution.
As there should be.
I believe, I forget the exact decision, but the Supreme Court said that sawed-off shotguns were not considered protected under the Second Amendment because they had, quote, no value to a militia, which, as you may recall, is the actual wording.
Of the amendment.
Of the actual Second Amendment.
Exactly.
And obviously, look, you know, it was actually, the speech the president gave was actually, by his standards, quite good.
Agreed.
Which in some ways is going to make our final closing even worse, but I'll get to that in a second.
Doubly agreed.
But, no bueno. Just to give you a little sneak preview. But this is what amazes me. So we have a guy who, if you believe the early reports coming out, just a 64-year-old man just woke up one day, decided to cart roughly a dozen weapons into a hotel, remove a hurricane-proof massive glass window, and proceeded to open fire with military-grade weaponry on a country music concert. Now, I have no illusions that there will be no debate about gun control laws in this country.
Agreed.
Because of Sandy Hook.
Mm-hmm.
It's tragic. I completely disagree with it. I'm happy to have a debate about it. We have some colleagues that are pro-gun. That's fine. We can have a discussion. But as a country, when we decided that an elementary school full of shot children... was worth the price of the Second Amendment, that effectively shut down the conversation.
Agreed.
I think it's nonsense.
And
but
you know,
I don't get to make policy.
I am as fierce a First Amendment advocate as you're going to find.
Absolutely.
You know this. But I would also be the very first one to stand in line and say your First Amendment right does not allow you to yell fire in a crowded theater.
Or kill that guy.
Exactly. It does not allow you to post on social media that, gee, I hope somebody shoots the president today.
Right.
Those sorts of expressions have or can and should have consequences for the person who says it or writes it.
And the Supreme Court has said
And the Supreme Court has said so. So I think there is such hypocrisy for people to suggest that the Second Amendment is absolute, but the First Amendment
is
ought not to be.
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways.
Well, and combine that with the inevitable frustration of the now familiar refrain, well, now is not the time. Well, when is the time?
Exactly. Exactly. And let's face it, there is not going to be a time as long as the politicians sitting in those offices know that they are taking thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars from the NRA.
And let's be very clear before we move on. The National Rifle Association is not advocating for the rights of gun owners.
Exactly.
The NRA is advocating for the position of gun manufacturers. Let's mm-hmm. be completely honest with ourselves.
Exactly.
So.
All right. We're
final closing.
Sort of tight on time. So yeah. The final closing.
Final
which
closing.
Was not one of the president's better hours.
Oh, man. I've watched it about four times. I still can hardly credit my eyes and ears. But we have the unfolding and rapidly accelerating humanitarian disaster in Puerto Rico.
Yes.
Which, let's remind everybody, Puerto Rico is part of the United States.
These are U.S. citizens.
These are our countrymen. Let's blunt terms.
Mm-hmm.
95% of the island still is without power.
Mm-hmm.
90%
and
of the
will be for months.
For months. You try, you know, people complain about power outages. You know, imagine this going on till what, February? And 90% of the island has no potable water,
mm-hmm.
which you need to survive. Meaning, if nothing is done, we're going to see cholera,
mm-hmm.
typhus. I mean, these are mm-hmm. diseases that have been wiped out everywhere else
mm-hmm.
in, you know, the quote unquote first world.
Mm-hmm.
So the president goes to Puerto Rico and proceeds to give one of the most starkly racist tirades I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Not once, but several times he chided the Puerto Ricans for how much money
they were costing.
They were
going to
cost the United States. Then told them they ought to be grateful that they weren't suffering through a real catastrophe.
Mm-hmm. Like Katrina.
It was mind-blowing. And then proceeding to, you know, shoot three-pointers with paper towels.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was at a football game with a T-shirt gun.
Mm-hmm.
I am only speaking for myself here, but there are only two conclusions I think you can draw from that from that speech and that performance. Because the very day before, he showed he's capable of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
He's capable of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
So either option number one, the man is stunningly, breathtakingly, grotesquely stupid. Or option number two, he does not see Puerto Ricans as equal to Americans because they're not white. Because those are the only two possibilities. He didn't
could be both,
maybe both. But
could
he didn't.
Be both.
But he did not criticize Texas. He did not criticize Florida. Mm-hmm. He did not criticize Louisiana for how much money they were costing. And please don't give me this excuse that Puerto Rico is surrounded by big water.
Big water.
Yeah, come on.
Look, you and I have talked before.
We went to the moon. I think we can handle.
I think we can handle
120 miles off of Florida.
It's only 120 miles,
right?
And mind you, we can find a way to, like, you know, possibly start a war in Asia, but we won't go there. Look, you and I have talked before about the fact that the die with this president's been cast.
Oh yeah, he is who he is.
He is who he is. And as Barack Obama said, and it was one of the more thought-provoking comments of his 8 years as president, and there were many thought-provoking moments of his presidency. And he said, look, the presidency doesn't change you. It magnifies who you already are.
Absolutely. And Lincoln said the same thing.
It magnifies who you already are. And so, you know, he is who he is. He's going to act the way he's going to act. You aren't going to like it. I'm not going to like it. But the reality is that, you know, he's still going to see the world through that lens. And for what it's worth, the few images that I saw last night, he returned to that, for lack of a better phrase, caring-looking person when he was talking to the men and women who had been shot during the terrorist act in Las Vegas. So, you know, he has it in him.
He chooses to use it.
When and where he uses it.
Right. Exactly. And I just want to be clear before we go. I am not criticizing conservatives. I'm not criticizing Republicans. I am criticizing Donald Jonathan Trump.
Specifically.
Period.
And I'm there with you.
So I think my friend and colleague, Dr. Anthony Moretti, needs to go find some more DayQuil.
I know. I need more DayQuil and lunch.
What was that old phrase? Starve a cold, feed a... Feed a cold, feed a fever.
I'm going to eat today, all right?
Good plan.
I'm going to eat today. So yes, feed a cold and starve a fever. So I am Anthony Moretti, or Under the Weather is my acronym or my name this week.
Yes. I am Dr. Soren Fanning.
He is the anniversary guy. That's your nom de plume for the week, all right?
Absolutely. You know, 15 years, it's been spectacular. I've been lucky enough to marry my best friend, so I can't wait for the next 15.
And he is John Rowland. And his nom de plume is the voice in our head.
And so. Today, the grill master.
The grill master.
What time do I get to your house?
Never. I was just busy roasting both of you.
Nicely done.
Oh, look at this.
Someone has a career in stand-up.
I had to hold back on all of the political ones because that takes away from your guys' points.
Well,
That's okay.
So he's roasting us, huh?
Well, I try to keep my point hidden beneath my hairline.
If his roasting of me helps to get rid of this head cold faster, I'd be right on board. But there that wraps up episode
seven.
Seven.
It is now officially seven.
Of the Podcast Profs.
On November 3rd in Hopwood Auditorium, Robert Morris University, join me, Don Luisi, for Bringing the Blues to RMU. This is a live event featuring Pittsburgh's Queen of the Blues, Jill West, and Blues Attack. With a screening of Blues Chronicles from the Berg, three short documentary profiles of Pittsburgh blues legends Eugene Morgan, Bill Weiner, and Jill West. This tribute to the blues is sponsored by the Blues Society of Western Pennsylvania, the Academic Media Center, and RMU Radio. That's Bringing the Blues to RMU. Friday, November 3rd at 5 p.m., Hopwood Auditorium, Robert Morris University. Admission is free to the public.